Are you ready?
Massacre.
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 Don't you love it?
Hello and welcome in to the number one radio program that keeps on burning up the charts. That's right, it's Massacre Radio on this, the 45th episode. I, of course, am your host, Members Only Dave, and today I'll be joined by none other than Toby Radloff, the genuine nerd from Cleveland, Ohio. I've labored for months trying to get him on this very radio program, and now that he's reached retirement, he has a little bit more spare time. You know, you can't tell the story of Cleveland without mentioning Toby Radloff. He is a major component to the culture here in Cleveland, every bit as much as, say, the Dead Boys, Perubu, or Arsenio Hall even. Anyway, I'll be sure to cover all that ground and everything else in between. You picked a winner, baby. It's Massacre Radio. Come on!
This is Massacre Radio.
Próximo mente después de la masacre de radio, ella trae está dando el tratamiento silencioso y te invita en carajiro, pero debes ser bien seriedad. Diablos no tu doblas hasta que consigas tu salida por cualquier medio necesario. Todo eso y más aquí en WKMA Cleveland, una estación HD2.
This is Toby Radloff, the genuine nerd, here in Cleveland. If you got the time, you'll get the tan. The sun is hot and intense.
Yeah, that's right. You're dialed into the hottest ticket in town. It is Massacre Radio on WKMA Cleveland, an HD2 station. And wouldn't you know it, joining me now on the Massacre Radio hotline, it is an honor to welcome in Cleveland's own Toby Radloff. Toby, of course, is the self-proclaimed genuine nerd from Cleveland, Ohio. He's appeared numerous times in the Harvey Pekar comic series, American Splendor, as well as plenty of other credits under his belt, which we'll get into. But first, Toby, thank you for your time today, man. How you doing?
So far, so good. It's a nice day. Just basically got up at 8:30, had breakfast, did some grocery shopping, and came home.
So before we get into things here, Toby, I understand that you recently, within the past month or so, you've retired from your job at the Cleveland VA. How has your retirement been so far, and what are some of the things that you're looking forward to doing with your newfound free time?
So far, so good. I mean, the process is still a bit slow because I'm still like in that transition period where I'm transitioning from paychecks to pension. They're still in the process of working, of, you know, signing, dotting the I's and crossing the T's on the application, if you know what I mean.
I noticed that you just recently took a trip to White Castle, which is kind of a big deal because there's none here in the Cleveland area, at least anymore. I know White Castle burgers are among your favorites, so how was the trip, and did the burgers still hold up to how you remembered them, Toby?
Yeah, they're still as good as I remember. Yeah, I went to the one up in Sunbury, Ohio, which is off I-71, but still I made it to the White Castle. But then again, I took like a road trip on the way down, like going through Mansfield, going through Galleon. There was like an antique mall in Galleon that had like all kinds of records, because like Harvey, I'm a record collector. I'm pretty much cutting back on the records because where am I going to put all of them?
Right.
And I'll probably be dead before I have a chance to listen to all of them.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, about, you know, the whole collecting records thing, how much of your old stash do you still have these days in your collection? I'm sure a few have come and gone throughout the years, no?
Yeah, I've sold like stuff off and on over the half price when I was in positions where I needed some money. But basically, with me being out of debt now, thanks to getting my mother's inheritance, I was able to pay off the cards, and this way I could retire without debt. And I don't see myself going to thrift store after thrift store or flea market after flea market, wasting my time, mainly because of my age and stuff like that.
No, absolutely.
If I want a particular title, I'll go to Discogs.
Now, Toby, I want to start from the beginning here, of course. As a lot of folks know, as I mentioned, you were a recurring character in Harvey Pekar's American Splendor comic series. But I want to ask you what your life was like before you met Harvey. I mean, I know you graduated high school in the mid to late 70s, so did you always consider yourself a genuine nerd? And what sort of things were you doing with your life before you started working at the VA?
When I was, I pretty much known I was different pretty much since I was born, mainly because sometimes I didn't see eye to eye with other kids. And there have been times that I'd be picked on or bullied when I was much younger. And at times I had a hard time dealing with it. But as I got older, I was able to deal with it a little more. Basically, I had more friends when I was in high school than when I was in junior high. You know, even people who have bullied me in the past have pretty much honored me since I've been in the movie and the comic book. And they've like, and I've been like the class reunions where they've apologized for the way they treated me in school.
Did you ever feel that a lot of the time the apologies you were getting, were they sincere, or do you think they were done in jest because of your notoriety?
I think a little of both, but I think more from the heart, because kids can get very immature, and as their brains develop, they think better, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Because, you know, like a teenager's brain isn't as fully developed as, say, in a full-grown adult, and as I've grown older, I've learned more. If you know what I mean.
Oh,
going back to elementary and junior high, I've been pretty much a loner, and the friends I did hang out with, they were pretty much people that only wanted one-on-one friendships as well.
You know, Toby, I'm just kind of going through my research packet here, and it says that when you were in high school, before you had even met Harvey, that you had a problem with a classmate one time when you were in high school, and that you went after him with a hammer, and the teacher had to stop you before you did something horribly wrong. Is this a true account, and what can you tell us about this event? I mean, the kid had to be doing something pretty heinous if you considered even for one moment to take a hammer to his skull, you know?
I mean, the guy was harassing me to the point where I was at my breaking point, because at that time I was having trouble dealing with my temper because I didn't really know how to handle teasing and bullying. Mm-hmm. And I was just, you know, at my wit's end, and I ended up, it was in a shop class, and I ended up grabbing the hammer and going after him. But I'm just fortunate that the teacher stopped it before anything happened, because if I did hit him, it would have caused more problems for me. What happened was is that I ended up going to the assistant principal's office, and the assistant principal at the junior high I went to, you could say he was a mean bastard, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Because one time he had threatened me with one of these leather straps, like the kind that a barber would use to sharpen a straight razor, mm-hmm. and he slapped it across his desk, knocking things off the desk and breaking his nameplate. But then again, I had my doubts if he would actually use it on a student. Mm-hmm. You know, if he tried that today, he would have been sued.
Times have most certainly changed. Yes, I would agree.
Right, because even back then, I had a principal tell me that because of my temper, a parent threatened to sue my parents. Because, I mean, I don't think it was the same student that I went after with the hammer, but it was somebody I lost. Because another time I threw a chair at a student.
Okay.
And I think that was like the result. But then again, I think the principal worked it out where there was no lawsuit or nothing, and my parents weren't involved. But it was from there that I needed to tone things down, and I was bullied a lot less.
So basically, once your classmates realized that you meant business, they sort of backed off altogether, huh?
Yes, basically, because I learned as I was getting older that losing my temper would do nothing. It would just cause more problems for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, violence is never the answer, as we all know. Okay, now, I want to ask you about when you first met Harvey Pekar. I know that was over 40 years ago, but what do you remember about the first time you two had met? I mean, is there anything that really stands out from those first few encounters that you can recall or share?
Yeah, I first got hired at the VA in December of 1980, I went downtown to take a civil service examination. I took the exam. I got in for an interview at the VA at Wade Park, and they put me in the file room, and that was where I met Harvey for the first time. And Harvey noticed something about me, how I did my job. And then Harvey and I got to know each other quite well. And sometimes we would go out on weekends, like Saturdays or Sundays. He would sell books. He would go to library sales, garage sales, and estate sales to buy these books and records. Mm-hmm. And he would end up selling them. And then Harvey was also selling records to coworkers at the VA hospital. And he even sold me or gave me a bunch of records. But Harvey and I got to know each other well. He wrote me up in several stories, starting with American Splendor number 9, when he was still self-publishing the book, and I was prominent mainly in American Splendor 9 and American Splendor 10, which had like a number of stories about me. And then, you know, future volumes of Splendor was like maybe like one, two, or maybe three, maybe like one or two stories per book up until the time he stopped self-publishing. I think he had Dark Horse or somebody published the books ever since, and I've only appeared like occasionally in the comic books because it was like around the time he stopped self-publishing was also when the cancer hit.
Harvey was considerably older than you when you had first met. Did it surprise you at all, Toby, that you two became friends and took to each other the way that you did?
Yeah, he became a good friend of mine. You know, we very seldom had differences, and it was at that time that I found out that Harvey was a vegetarian. And I didn't know Harvey was a vegetarian until like right after sometimes I would go to Harvey and Joyce's house to do cleaning or other stuff, you know, for a few extra bucks. And this is like while Harvey was in his cancer thing. And then it was at a time when I was having financial issues, mainly because I ran up credit cards and I was in consumer credit counseling for a couple years. And for a while, money was tight, but otherwise, you know, things were, you know, going well between me and Harvey. And eventually Harvey, you know, snapped out of the cancer, but it was like around the time he was doing all these, I mean, even before the cancer, he was doing these Letterman appearances, and then that led to MTV. And MTV came to the record room originally to do something about Harvey. Harvey introduced me to the MTV crew, and from there, I appeared like in a number of MTV Week in Rock or MTV News segments. One of them, and a few of them are on YouTube or Vim or on Wayne Allen Herald's site. Mm-hmm. And from there, I was like, there's a Crumbly Burger restaurant that used to be in Willoughby, then went to Old McDonald's up in Collinwood when it was the last old Golden Arches in Ohio, I believe. And it was at 152nd and St. Clair across from Collinwood High School. And that one, I think, was around till about 89 when they replaced it with a new restaurant. But it was the last one of its kind in Ohio when we did that taping. And then from there, we went to the White Castle.
You know, it is a shame that they ever did get rid of that McDonald's over there by Collinwood High School that you're talking about there, Toby. I mean, they surely don't make them like they used to, you know?
Yeah. I wanted to, like, do a couple of iconic things for that one MTV shot, and that was how I loved the burgers. And I really discovered White Castle even before I talked about it on MTV, mm-hmm. mainly because I take trips to Columbus, and I used to do a lot of driving in the 80s. I would stop at White Castle. I think the first time I had it, I was going to a computer convention in Cincinnati, and we stopped at the White Castle on the way home, and it was from there that I liked it. I started going more often, but then again, I was a lot younger, a lot thinner, and I was doing a lot more driving at that time.
Okay, since you mentioned it, Toby, I'm going to go off the cuff here, and I got to ask, what is your personal record for most White Castle burgers consumed in one sitting? Were you ever a volume guy, or did you fancy a little bit more of a leisure attitude towards the burgers and keep it casual?
I think it might have been like eight of the double cheeseburgers. That was, I think, the day that MTV filmed it.
Okay.
Up at the one that used to be at Brook Park and Pearl. There was like a whole plate of them that was ordered for me and for the crew. And it was also, I think, at that time, because I think Harvey was with us also on that run. And from there, that was how I found out Harvey was a vegetarian, because he didn't want any. He wanted the fries, but not the burgers.
Toby Radloff, the genuine nerd from Cleveland, Ohio, is my guest today on Massacre Radio. Okay, so I want to ask you about the whole genuine nerd thing. It says here that you're a fan of the film Revenge of the Nerds, and that you even drove over 200 miles to see it for the very first time. Is that true, Toby?
It is true. At that time, a lot of movies didn't come to Cleveland until they opened in other cities. I had access to out-of-town newspapers at the VA hospital library because they subscribed to the Akron Beacon Journal, the Columbus Dispatch, the Pittsburgh Press, mm-hmm. or Post Gazette, the Toledo Blade. I was looking at a Toledo Blade paper. And that was where I saw the Revenge of the Nerds ad. And I noticed it hadn't opened in Cleveland yet. And I just got on the turnpike, drove to Southwick Mall, which is not far from the exit. Mm-hmm. It was like a little 8-screen cinema with postage stamp size screens. But I loved the movie, and it was like from there, like on the way back, that I found out it was going to be opening in Cleveland, and I ended up seeing it probably like 30 times. And then like in early 85, I bought the VHS of it.
Oh, that's awesome. So let me ask you, when you first saw Revenge of the Nerds, what was it like seeing nerds represented in a positive light for a change, on the big screen no less? I mean, it had to be a bit triumphant in some ways, huh? I mean, suddenly it seemed to be cool to be a nerd, you know?
Yeah, I know. The thing was is that they were picked on by the jocks in the movie, and even toward the end when they trashed the house, they stood up for themselves, and they were telling people, you know, you're telling people, be yourself, you know, don't let people bother you. I mean, it was a feel-good movie, although looking back at it 40 years later, some parts of the movie end up getting criticized. I mean, mainly with the funhouse scene between Lewis Skolnick and the cheerleader. Because a lot of people criticized that, you know, later on when it became like Me Too and stuff like that. But people didn't think of that back in 84.
Toby, just go ahead and briefly talk about how much Revenge of the Nerds resonates with you even still to this day. And what might your favorite sequel or the one that sticks out the most in your mind? Which one would that be?
The last two movies were only so-so compared to the first two. I got all four of the movies on DVD now in a package. And I remember like the fourth one, Nerds in Love, that was on Fox TV. It came with some of the scenes are in 3D, and 7-Eleven was giving away the glasses for it. And I ended up going to a 7-Eleven to get the glasses. I think I might still have them somewhere, but even though I have the fourth movie on a DVD, I had taped it with the VCR when I was still like doing tapes. Then again, I got rid of most of my VCR tapes, you know, like when I moved.
Right.
Because you know, I was going into DVDs.
Right.
Now, as a lot of the folks know, you did corresponding segments with MTV in the past, but around that same time, you had made numerous appearances also on the Eddie Marshall Show locally here on Cablevision in Cleveland. Was being a personality and appearing in videos something you ever could have forecasted? I mean, it seems like by all accounts, you just sort of fell into it. So once you were in that circle, did you ever make a conscious effort to further your video career, or was it mostly just a hobby or a thing you did for fun?
At that time, it was pretty much just a hobby, you know, because as I said, I met Eddie Marshall after we saw the MTV stuff. He was like doing a lot of video work, and I appeared like on a number of sequences that appeared on the local cable, and Eddie had submitted them to MTV, but MTV preferred the stuff that Wayne Allen Harold or their New York crew was doing. But still, with all the Eddie Marshall stuff being on YouTube, they sort of took on a new life. And a few of them appeared with Harvey. A few of them Harvey was on.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Toby, because in this one particular video, I noticed Harvey's hanging out with another guy I have never heard of, Emil Heifetz. What's this guy's deal? I mean, did he own the studio? Did he own the cameras and just want to hang around while you guys are shooting? I mean, who is this guy?
Yeah, it was a hospital patient that Harvey got to know. I mean, Emil's Jewish, Harvey's Jewish, and I guess that might be the common bond, but Emil was like an eccentric, just like me, just like Harvey.
Now, after people had familiarized themselves with you, Toby, from the Eddie Marshall Show, as well as the comic series American Splendor, you then went on to make about a dozen appearances on MTV as a correspondent from about 1987 to 1991, by my estimation. MTV was huge in the 80s. What was going through your mind when MTV approached you and said, hey, we want to work with you. We want you to be in some videos for us. I mean, that had to be exciting. Just talk a little bit about the excitement and what it was like working with MTV. I mean, not only working with MTV, but working with them when they were still culturally relevant, you know?
I was excited, yes, because I wanted people to notice me as well as Harvey. And even though Harvey has continued to deny it, I still think that his appearances on Letterman helped his career. And being on MTV sort of, you know, I sort of like was tagging along with Harvey, and the MTV spots made people aware of me. Mm-hmm. And from there, there was like a Superman convention in 88. Yeah, no, it was middle of 88 that the Superman convention was at the public hall. And Harvey and I were to do a spot at one of the conference rooms, but a Star Trek related group was running overtime. So we ended up doing the segment right in the hallway. And it was there that I met Wayne Allen Harold and Mark Bosco. And Wayne and Mark were taping the segment with me and Harvey up at the Superman convention. And also, at that time, MTV was looking for a local person to do my segments. You know, so they wouldn't have to send a crew from New York, you know, down.
Right.
And MTV contracted with Wayne and Mark to do MTV segments. It ran, I think, from late 87. I think the last one appeared like about March or April of 89. And then from there, that led to Killer Nerd.
So as it pertains to working with MTV and doing those corresponding segments with them, I read somewhere that Harvey felt that maybe you were being exploited by them and you were possibly the butt of a few jokes. Would you agree with that? Did you ever feel as if you were being exploited or treated as a joke to some degree while working with MTV?
Sometimes I wonder, because sometimes people had that idea, you know, because I consider, you know, because at that time, you know, autistic was not a common term, but I consider myself autistic in a way, because I did have like a lot of ideas, a lot of stuff on my mind, and times I didn't agree with others, but if I were a kid today, I'd be considered autistic. People thought that if I were to go on, I mean, they wanted me, Harvey was trying to get me to go on Letterman with him, believe it or not.
Okay.
But one of the producers at Letterman didn't think it was a good idea for fear that I would be made fun of or ridiculed. And so that never happened. And then, I mean, and then there were like other times, even when there were plans to make American Splendor the movie, that issue had been brought up again about being ridiculed. But then again, that came on the back burner. That, you know, my part got worked into the movie just with both with me and with Judah Friedlander, and I've gotten more honors and acceptance rather than ridicule thanks to my various media appearances, whether it be in American Splendor, Killer Nerd, Townies, other movies I've done, or my appearances on social media.
You had mentioned Harvey going on David Letterman and how you thought that was something that helped his career. What did he ever tell you about the way he was treated by David Letterman and his crew and all that? Because I know he's spoken about it in the past and he feels maybe he was mistreated at times. What did he ever mention to you, Toby, as far as all that's concerned? Anything?
Harvey admitted that sometimes he was treated like shit, especially when with the confrontations over General Electric.
Yes.
But then again, Letterman kept inviting him back up until the time the cancer hit. He was like mostly on when it was on NBC, and NBC still would not like release the rights to the segments involving GE. But then again, I mean, it was since that time that GE sold NBC to Comcast Universal Studios. But I think those are like still restricted videos, even though they've shown up on YouTube. Harvey continued to be on Letterman a few more times beyond that. And I think he was on just once when the show moved from NBC to CBS. Now, I think it was like right after that CBS appearance that the cancer hit.
Toby Radloff is my guest, the genuine nerd from Cleveland, Ohio, once described by Anthony Bourdain as, quote, justifiably famous. Toby, I mentioned Anthony Bourdain there. I know you met him when he was in Cleveland filming an episode of his TV show. You guys went to Sokolowski's, a place which I miss dearly. I'm sure a lot of people do in the area. What can you tell us about your time spent with Anthony Bourdain hopping and bopping around Cleveland? I mean, that had to be special.
I mean, I was only vaguely familiar with Anthony Bourdain before I met him, but the experience was good. I remembered we were like taping at the Free Stamp on what was probably the coldest day of the year.
Right.
You're being like right on the lake when it was like single degrees out, when it was like single digit degrees outside with a wind chill well below freezing. It was a little hard to do, but it was like an exciting experience, if you know what I mean. And then from there, we went to Sokolowski's. I mean, that pretty much went well. But then again, I mean, there were some differences, you know, behind the scenes. But otherwise, that was a, well, that was probably like the most talked about appearance I have ever made on television.
Just a few more questions here, Toby, before we go ahead and wrap this up. I thought this was interesting. You know, you can't always count on Wikipedia for all the best facts because, after all, anybody can edit that stuff. But I'm reading here on your Wikipedia, it says that in 2006, you tried out to be a member of Howard Stern's Whack Pack, but you didn't win because they thought you were already too famous. What can you tell us about your trial run as a Stern Show Whack Packer? I mean, what was that like hanging out with Artie, Robin, Fred, and Howard, no less? I mean, that had to be huge.
I felt honored to be on Howard Stern's show. I knew from the get-go that I was not going to win because I don't see myself going to New York every couple of weeks to be on his show. And the person that won it was basically a guy living in a rundown motel in Vermont. He called himself Bigfoot.
Bigfoot, yes.
And he was the one that won it. And then I think the third contestant was a guy, a paraplegic in a wheelchair, who used a dildo as a mouth controller for the wheelchair.
Okay.
I mean, it was interesting. I met Howard. I met Robin. It was a pretty interesting experience. It was honors enough just being on the show and going to New York for a couple of days.
Did the Howard Stern show ever end up sending you a prize, by the way? I know they gave the runner-up, like, what, $500? And they said they'd find something for you eventually. Did they ever make good on that, Toby?
I think I got maybe like $500 or something. I don't remember.
Okay, I got
it. It was money that went into the bank that I later spent. And they did pay for my hotel room when I was in New York.
Howard, if you're listening, and I know you are, Toby demands another 500 bones, all right? I know you can hear me loud and clear. All right, Toby, so how often these days do you get stopped and recognized as the genuine nerd still when you're out and about in Cleveland? I'm guessing that has to happen occasionally, right?
Yeah, once in a while I do get the recognition. Anymore I could go to a store or whatever, no one will see me, but there have been times that I would go somewhere and someone would recognize me. Whether they most likely see me on Facebook or YouTube or whatever. Because I'm still doing stuff off and on with Wayne Allen Harold that does get on Facebook. And then sometimes Wayne would put it on YouTube for a few weeks and then take it down, and then a few months later put it back up, run it for a few weeks, and take it down.
I mean, Toby, I know you're doing the show with me, and that's all well and good, but do you ever get tired of the fanfare even after all these years, or talking about the genuine nerd thing in general, or would you say it's something that you still welcome?
I'm still happy to talk about it. I mean, as I said, I never became a big A-list star, if you know what I mean. But I mean, I like it where people would recognize me for what I did, what I would still do off and on Facebook. I've cut back on the acting ever since Harvey passed away. But I have done like most of the stuff with Wayne, and Wayne and I are still good friends. I'm going to be doing like sort of like a remake of Townies next year.
Well, Toby, it's been an honor to have you on the program. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we cut you loose?
Yeah, basically, go to Facebook and then look up Toby Radloff.
Toby Radloff, the genuine nerd from Cleveland, Ohio, has been my guest today on Massacre Radio. Toby, thanks so much for your time, man, and all the best to you in your newfound retirement, all right? Congratulations.
All right, thanks, David.
Massacre.
Hey, thanks again to my guest, Toby Radloff. I only had a finite amount of time with him, and I couldn't get into some topics that I had, mostly pertaining to the films Killer Nerd and Bride of Killer Nerd, but maybe we'll save that for next time. Hopefully Toby's out there enjoying some of those sweet, sweet White Castle burgers. I can't even say officially that I've even had a burger from White Castle. I mean, even as far back as when they released Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle 20 years ago, there weren't really any White Castles within 40 miles of where I lived, so it was never really an option. Anyway, that's the show, but I want to leave you with this, the Andrew Dice Clay house remix that yours truly put together. If you follow me on my many social media accounts at Members Only Dave, you've probably already seen or heard this, but for those who have not and you're a fan of the Dice Man, here it is for you to enjoy. I'd like to thank you for checking out this episode of Massacre Radio. As always, I've been your host, Members Only Dave, and I'll talk at you next week.
A uterus fell out, that fucking whore. Dump the bitch on the next block.
Don't you see, I also keep working, and I put together a few new poems. Well, stick these in your pocket, all right? They get fucking better. He shit pepperoni, his woolly dick got hard. Oh! Georgie, fuck that one-eyed slut. Fuck the sheep, blew a horse, flicked his feet. She ate his ass off very nice, tongued his balls not once, but twice. Oh! Some chick was sucking my cock.
I never became a big A-list star, if you know what I mean.